Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. It's been another interesting year for farmers in Illinois with a late season drought coming after last year's torrential rains. We'll have an update on harvest season, plus a look at how the growing number of women farmers are finding challenges in using agriculture equipment mostly designed for men. That's later in the show. But first, coronavirus disease continues spreading exponentially in parts of Illinois, and state and local government leaders are dialing up their responses. Here's Governor J.B. Pritzker late last week.
The numbers don't lie. If things don't take a turn in the coming days, we will quickly reach the point when some form of a mandatory stay-at-home order is all that will be left. With every fiber of my being, I do not want us to get there. But right now, that seems like where we are heading.
Other officials are not waiting for that. In Chicago, Mayor Lori Lightfoot imposed a voluntary stay-at-home order that took effect this morning and lasts for 30 days.
And while this is tough, and of course this whole year has been tough, we must tell you, you must cancel the normal Thanksgiving plans, particularly if they include guests that do not live in your immediate household.
Meanwhile, Illinois Secretary of State Jesse White is closing all driver's services facilities starting tomorrow, that's Tuesday, through December 7th. Because of that, if your driver's license or state ID card was set to expire, it is being extended through June. Joining us now for a closer look at COVID across Illinois are three reporters who've been covering the pandemic in their communities. Jamie Nesbitt-Golden covers several Southside neighborhoods for the news site Block Club Chicago. Jamie, welcome back to the 21st. And we also
thanks
for being here. We're, as ever, on Zoom and dealing with connectivity this morning. Moving out to the suburbs, Cassie Buckman is here from the Northwest Herald. Cassie, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And finally, downstate is Brendan Moore, who covers business and city government for the State Journal Register. Brendan, welcome back to you to the 21st.
Thanks, Brian. Glad to be here.
So, Jamie, I'm going to begin with you. Can you just tell us, what are you seeing in Chicago? Is the surge in COVID cases being felt in the communities you cover?
Oh, definitely. There are folks who, again, are living in extended households who, are typically, working class, so they really can't shelter in place or stay in place because they're typically working a second or third shift job. And so that adds another layer of worry, particularly when you're living with older, relatives and younger children. It's definitely being felt here. But that said, there are a lot of people that are still going out and getting tested, which is the important thing. And we aren't in dire straits as we were earlier this year with regards to, the lack of access to testing. There are more testing sites, opening in these areas, which really helps get, folks out there and tested. And I think most people are becoming more vigilant about this. I think the fact that Mayor Lightfoot and Dr. Aguadi are basically telling folks, this is the worst we've seen it, I think people are now on guard and they're sort of going to, buckle down and do what they have to do to get through this.
Yeah, taking. We'll come back to in a minute how the mayor is responding. I think her approach is interesting. But first, I want to move out to the suburbs. Cassie, you're based in McHenry County. I understand you cover a few communities in Kane County as well. What are you seeing with COVID cases out there?
Yeah, I mean, they've definitely been surging for a bit now. I remember at the beginning, or at least during the summer, during the pandemic, I was kind of surprised or worried to see that there were 62 new cases, one day. But, now we've gotten to the point where now, as of Friday, the last time, the health department updated its COVID dashboard, we're seeing now 239 new cases as of Friday in McHenry County alone. So it's definitely taken a surge. There's definitely been a lot of people, affected because of new, these mitigations that have been put into place to stem kind of the spread of COVID. I know a lot of At this point, we're still in tier one mitigations, which means obviously no indoor dining for restaurants, and a few more restrictions there. We're seeing, you know, a lot of people really starting to, I think, you know, realize that these cases aren't going away, and it might even be, you know, at a point where it's almost worse than it was a few months ago even, which, you know, we're kind of returning to a place where we are feeling this new concern and a new level of, I guess, just concern for these cases and how they keep rising.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we have had, you know, testing sites available, mobile testing sites from the IDPH. You know, there was, a couple of weeks ago, one in Crystal Lake. You know, I think there's one in McHenry recently as well. But yeah, we're definitely seeing a point where people are getting concerned. I think people, you know, it's definitely become, a lot of people are noticing that surge, I think.
Yeah. Brendan, what about in Springfield? I saw you had a story that within the last week or so that Springfield actually has a sort of national ranking, and not in a good way.
Right, Brian. According to the data that's collected by the New York Times, the Springfield metropolitan area, so that's Springfield and Menard, or Sammamon and Menard counties, is one of the fastest growing regions for new coronavirus cases. And the numbers really bear that out. If you look at the daily totals from the county, we're routinely getting into the triple digits in new cases every day. Last week, Sangamon County one day reported 343 new cases. And this really is the first major wave of the virus to come through the region. We were really kind of spared the worst of it back in March and April, but now we're really starting to see it. We were placed into mitigations on November 1st. We hit that 8% threshold in late October, and just within a matter of 3 weeks, we've doubled our 7-day rolling positivity rate. It's up to 17.2% now in our region. And so it's having a major impact down here. And we're starting to see it even in Springfield with essential services. I also had a story last week about how more than a third of the Springfield Fire Department at one point last week was in quarantine because of a COVID outbreak. About 19 Springfield firefighters, including the fire chief, had tested positive for the virus. So we're really starting to see that first major wave of the virus. And I think it took a little while for a lot of people down here to really realize that and take it seriously. There's a lot of pushback when mitigations were imposed. In fact, local leaders down here did not even impose full mitigations.
Yeah, let's put a pin in that, because I want to come back to that and just take a moment to remind listeners that this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're having our Monday Reporters Roundtable, speaking with reporters from across Illinois about what they're seeing in COVID in their regions. And we've just sort of laid the groundwork for what is out there. Now let's talk about how governments are, or as we maybe just heard there, are not responding. We're talking with Brendan Moore, who's a reporter with the State Journal Register in Springfield. Cassie Buckman is with the Northwest Herald in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. And Jamie Nesbitt Golden is a reporter with Block Club Chicago. And Jamie, I want to return to you. As of 6 this morning, everyone in Chicago is under a stay-at-home advisory. I understand there's a similar rule for suburban Cook County. Can you talk about what that means? I thought this was an interesting approach. The mayor really sort of said this is, as I understand it, you know, it's not an order, it's an advisory, it's voluntary. Do you have a sense of how this is being received?
Well, I know for a lot of folks, a lot of residents here, they understand why it's necessary. That said, there's still the matter of COVID fatigue, right? You have a lot of people who have been doing all the right things since the pandemic began. And so, you know, they feel that these restrictions aren't as helpful as the mayor would like them to be. That said, you know, the fact that it's an advisory sort of takes the pressure off of people. And I think, given the fact that the state and the city have been going back and forth about whether or not to, you know, completely shut down, it sort of takes away that fear, right? So now with the holidays ahead of us, the city is putting a tighter cap on gatherings, saying only 10 people can be together for a social event. So we're sort of buckling down and sort of taking a wait-and-see approach to see if, you know, Chicago can get its act together ahead of Thanksgiving. And, you know, if the numbers, you know, stay steady, then perhaps there might be some light in this tunnel.
Yeah, although I think the mayor, well, as we heard in that clip a little while ago, she basically is urging people to, especially if your Thanksgiving plans typically include people outside of your immediate household, to dial back
right
on that. So,
right.
Yeah, Cassie, I want to wonder, in the suburbs, that is one of the places where you've seen businesses pushing back on some of these mitigations. Is that been an issue in the regions you cover? You know, this indoor dining, or are businesses largely complying with that?
No, businesses are not complying at a large level. They are very much not complying with this. In fact, there is even, you know, a couple of lawsuits filed, one by 37 local bars and restaurants that sought to remain open despite, you know, the governor's mitigation rules, which took effect for us on October 31st. So yeah, starting on October 31st, we couldn't have indoor dining, but a lot of restaurants have not been following that at all. I think, you know, recently during a Board of Health meeting, one of our, Department of Health officials mentioned that noncompliance has been increasing in McHenry County and across the region. I think, you know, not McHenry County itself, but in regions around it, I think as many as 90% of businesses are not complying with the indoor dining order. So there's definitely been a lot of pushback there. People are still eating indoors in restaurants. So it's definitely been, you know, a lot of people not complying. In addition, you know, a lot of our local leaders put out a statement or, you know, said after the mitigations were first announced that they would not be enforcing the indoor dining ban, but they would be having more of an educational approach to it. So they would basically be forwarding any complaints they got about this to the McHenry County Department of Health to take care of. And since then, I guess, you know, a couple of places, McHenry and Woodstock, have said that they will be enforcing other mitigations themselves, such as, you know, requiring reservations, limiting group sizes to 6 household members, having restaurants set tables 8 to 10 feet apart. But still, even though they are putting these mitigations into place, McHenry and Woodstock are still not enforcing the state's indoor dining ban. So, there's been a lot of pushback there.
And Brendan, it was a similar story in Springfield and Sangamon County, but the local officials have sort of gotten back on board with the state program. Can you just briefly, we only have a few minutes left in our segment, can you briefly describe the journey that they have taken in Springfield and Sangamon County?
Yeah, absolutely. So on November 1st, full mitigations took effect in Region 3, but leaders in Springfield, the mayor of Springfield, Jim Langfelder, and leaders in Sangamon County essentially told businesses to keep operating as is. And then a few days later, on Election Day, actually, they had a press conference where they announced that they were going to do what they called phased mitigations, which basically meant we're going to follow most of the governor's orders, but we're going to allow indoor dining and bar service to remain open at 25% capacity. And obviously with some additional restrictions, you had to fill out a form to help out with contact tracing if you were going to participate in that as a patron. And that was, they were going to revisit that within 2 weeks to see where case numbers were in the county. And it was kind of a Hail Mary, but a last-ditch effort to help bars and restaurants that have been really hard hit to survive. Well, the experiment was over within a week because our case numbers in the county were exploding. And so public health officials in town decided that we need to go into full mitigation. And the county did so, went into effect this past Friday, and we were at a point where before, you know, indoor dining and bar service kind of continued pretty much unimpeded. But as soon as mitigations went into effect on Friday, the county has actually been enforcing the mitigations. There's already been 5 businesses that have been cited and have actually had their food service establishment licenses suspended for allowing indoor dining service. So we're starting to see, it took a little while to get here, but you're starting to see more and more compliance with the mitigations because local officials have shown after trying something different that they've actually been willing to enforce the orders that bar indoor dining and bar service for now.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That is Brendan Moore, business and city reporter at the State Journal Register and newspaper in Springfield. We've also been speaking with Jamie Nesbitt-Golden, who's a reporter covering several Southside neighborhoods for Block Club Chicago, and Cassie Buckman, a reporter with the Northwest Herald. Thank you all so much for being here and sharing your reporting with us, and stay safe out there as you continue to keep your communities informed. Thanks for being here. Coming up after a short break, we are going to be taking a look at farm equipment, specifically the idea that some equipment was, or a lot of farm equipment, was designed with men in mind, but as growing number of women farmers are trying to use it, some are working on developing their own adaptations to that. That conversation after a short break here on the 21st. Stay with us.